Welcome to another Kingdom Studies class, The Greatness of the Kingdom. One of our textbooks is The Greatness of the Kingdom by Alba J. McLean. At this time, we're studying the greatness of the kingdom, or the kingdom of God, and the apocalypse. We're talking about the book of Revelation. This is class 38, part 2, or 38b. In Revelation, the second chapter, in verse 10, it states, "Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, and that you may be tested, and yet you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life." Now, I have printed out and typed up a history of the 10 periods of the persecution, or the Roman persecutions. And I want to get this on tape with this class, so that you will have a complete understanding of what's going on. We're going to use the chart back here behind me, and it starts back during this period of time, and the Roman persecution does with Nero. And we're going to go on through time until we finish up into, and we come into Constantine, when he marries the church to the state. The Roman persecution of Christians lasted about 3 centuries and never stopped completely during those 300 years. The historians have assigned this to what we call the 10 periods of persecution. The first persecutor was Nero. In Acts 25th chapter, verses 11 and 12, we find that Paul says that he shall stand before Caesar's throne. He was falsely accused, as we all know, in the book of Acts, that the Jews, Judaism, wanted to kill him. He was the worst enemy. This is what I typed out so many years ago. He began the first persecution for Christians where Peter and Paul got the crown of martyrdom and apostleship. The persecution began in 64 AD, in the 10th year of his reign. Now, for 10 years, Nero did not persecute the Lord's churches, but now Judaism was persecuting. Now, in the 10th year of his reign, Nero was the emperor to whom Paul was sent in his position, in Acts 25, 11, and 12. Nero, the last Roman emperor, reigned 54 to 68 of the Julian-Claudian line, was the son of Domitius Ahenobarbus and Julia Agrippa, niece of the Emperor Claudius. After the violent death of his first wife, Valeria Messalina, Emperor Claudius married Julia, adopted her son Nero, and gave him in marriage to his own daughter Octavia. Nero's mother had a mind to commit any sort of crime that she could possibly do to get her son stationed as the emperor of the Roman Empire, and of course she would be his co-regent. She prepared him for this station by Annaeus Seneca. She appointed as his tutor and calls the freedman Afranius Burrus, a rough but experienced soldier, to be made the commander of the Praetorian Guard. These men were the advisors and chief supporters of Nero in his becoming emperor after the sudden death of Claudius. Nero was born in Antium on December the 15th, A.D. 37, and was 17 years old when he began to be emperor. He believed himself to be a great singer, a poet, and a musician. And he was filled with sensuality and moral perversity. Agrippina has expected to be his partner as her son ruled the government. But he decided to get rid of her, and he had her murdered. The first years of Nero's reign, under the direction of Burrus and Seneca, the real powers behind the throne, were auspicious in every way. A series of regulations either abrogated or lessened the hardships of direct taxation, the arbitrariness of legislation and provincial administration, so that Rome and the empire were delighted. For the first 5 years of Nero's government were accounted the happiest of all times and regarded by Trajan as the best of the imperial era. The first 5 years of reign were the most glorious times in the Roman Empire, 54 to 59 AD, while the rest of his reign was horrible. Nero became a symbol of every sort of evil during that age. He killed his mother. He killed his brother. He killed his wives, Octavia and Poppaea. His counselor, Seneca, and many Roman leaders and generals. Nero, with his soulmates, rioted by night through the city, attacking men, assaulting women, and filled the vacant positions in the imperial court with the dregs of the society. Now, he also killed his one wife, Poppaea, and he just absolutely was what we call fascinated, sexually attracted to her tremendously. She was a great attraction to him, but he kicked her, and some historians say that while she aborted the child, that she died, her and the child both. Now, there was a slave that looked a lot like Poppaea, and Nero had him neutered, and he used him as his wife, as his lover, as Poppaea was, because she looked a lot, her facial features and dimensions were a lot like her. In the civic administration, extravagance abounded. By the way, please excuse this horse collar looking thing. My neck is in very bad condition, and extended reading is hard on me when I have to look down. Financial deficits grew overnight. The fortunes of those who had been condemned at law, of all the freedmen, of all the pretenders by faith, filled the depleted entourage of this horrible leader. The coin was deliberately debased. In other words, they were not gold and silver coins anymore. They were brass and copper. All efforts to stem the disasters were in vain. The general misery had reached its highest when in AD 64 occurred the terrible conflagration which burnt entirely 3 and partly 7 of the 14 districts in the city of Rome. The old authors, Tacitus and Suetonius, say clearly, the testimony of all other later Christian writers, that Nero himself gave the order to set the capital city on fire. He wanted to burn the old city up. And while he burned this old city up, millions of dollars of wealth disappeared in the fires. Countless works of unbelievable art were destroyed. Thousands of lives were taken. Nero had planned a new residential city, and he was going to call it Neronia. For 6 days, the fire ravaged the closely built quarters. Many thousands perished in the flames. Informers bribed for this very purpose declared that the Christians had set fire on Rome. Their doctrine of nothingness and earthly joys in comparison with the delights of the immortal souls in heaven was an enduring reproof to the desolate emperor. There began a fierce persecution throughout the empire through robbery, confiscation of Christian property, Christians were forced to pay in every way for the building of the new Rome. In this persecution, Peter and Paul were martyred in AD 67. Finally, the emperor started on a pleasure tour through the lower Italy and Greece as an actor, singer, and musician. Outbreaks in the provinces and in Rome itself now presaged the approaching overthrow of the Romanian tyranny. Julius Vindex, proconsul of Gallia, Lugdunensis, with the intent of giving Gaul an independent and worthy government, raised the banner of revolt and sought an alliance with the proconsuls of Spain, Rhine and Rhine provinces. Sulpicius Galba, proconsul of Hispania, Tarraconensis, who was already for the change, agreed to the plans presented to him, declared his fealty to Nero had ended, and he proclaimed emperor by his own army. Verginius Rufus, proconsul of Upper Germany, was offered the principate by his troops and led them against this usurper Vindex. In the battle at Vocentio or Besancon, Vindex was defeated and fell by his own sword. In Rome, the Praetorians, dazzled by the exploits of Galba, deserted Nero. The Senate declared him an enemy of the state and sentenced him to the death penalty of a common murderer. Outlawed and forsaken, he committed suicide in the house of one of his freedmen in June AD 68. At once and everywhere, Sulpicius Galba was accepted as emperor. The sudden disappearance of Nero, whose enemies had spread the report that he had fled to the east, gave rise to the later legend that he was still living and would return to set again upon his imperial throne. Next we have Domitian. Titus Flavius Domitianus. He was a Roman emperor and persecutor of the churches, son of Vespasian, and younger brother and successor of the emperor Titus. He was born October the 24th, AD 51, reigned from 81 to 96 AD. In spite of his private vices, he himself set up as a reformer of morals and religion. He was the first of the emperors to deify himself during his lifetime by assuming the title of Lord and God. After the revolt of Saturninus, he organized a series of bloodthirsty proscriptions against all the wealthy, noble families. A conspiracy in which his wife joined was formed against him, and he was murdered September the 18th, AD 96. So he ruled between 81 and 96 AD. When the acts of Nero's reign were reversed after his death, an exception was made as to the persecution of the Christians. Tertullian was involved in this. He was the emperor who exiled John to Patmos, where he saw his revelation. Among the four famous martyrs in the second persecution were Domitian's cousin Flavius Clemens, the consul, and Acilius Glabrio, who had also been consul. Flavia Domitilla, the wife of Flavius, was banished to Pandataria. The book of the Apocalypse was written in the midst of this storm of persecution, when many of the Christians had already perished. Irenaeus in Rome talked of the great Babylon drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Clement's epistle to the Corinthians was also written about this time. The Roman church continued loyal to the empire and set up his prayers to God that he would direct the rulers and magistrates in the exercise of the power committed to their hands. Clement's epistle 9, Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2. Before the end of his reign, Domitian ceased to persecute. He was between From 81 to 96 was Domitian. Now we go to Trajan. Trajan's reign was 98 to 117 AD. Emperor of Rome, 98 to 117, born in Italica, Spain, September the 18th, 53 AD. He died August the 7th, 117 AD. He was descended from an old Roman family and was adopted in 97 by Emperor Nerva. Trajan was one of the ablest of the Roman emperors. He was stately and majestic in his appearance and had a powerful will and showed admirable consideration and chivalrous kindness. He expanded the empire greatly during his time. He gained a large amount of territory for the empire and laid the foundations of civilizations all over the provinces by the founding of municipal communities. He established order in the borders of the Rhine and built large part of the boundary wall, what they call the Roman wilds, the limes, between Roman and Germanic territory from the Danube to the Rhine. And with great determination led two campaigns, 101 and 2 and 105 through 7, against the Dacian king, Decebalus, whose country he converted into a new Roman province and empire. Two other provinces were conquered, although neither proved of importance subsequently. The governor of Syria conquered Arabia, Petraea, and Trajan himself entered Armenia during the Trajan-Parthian Wars in 114 to 117 AD. In his internal administration, Trajan was incessantly occupied with encouraging commerce and industries. The harbor of Ancona was enlarged, and new harbors and roads were constructed. Numerous stately ruins in the round Rome gave proof of the emperor's zeal in erecting buildings for public purposes. The chief of these is the immense Forum Trajanum, which in size and splendor cast the forums of other emperors into the shade. In the middle of the great open space was the colossal equestrian statue of Trajan. The free area itself was surrounded by rows of columns and niches surrounded by high arches. At the end of the structure was the Bibliotheca Ulpia, in the court which stood the celebrated Trajan Column. The celebrated Trajan Column, with its relief representing scenes in the Tasian Wars. Later, Hadrian built a temple to be deified, to the deified Trajan at the end of the forum towards the Campus Martius. Art and learning flourished during Trajan's reign. Among his literary contemporaries were Tacitus, Juvenal, and the younger Pliny, with whom the emperor carried on an animated correspondence. This correspondence, belonging to the years between 111 and 113 AD, throws light on the persecution of Christians during this period of time in his reign. Pliny was legate of the double province of Bithynia and Pontus. In his territory, he found many Christians and requested instructions from Trajan. In his reply, Trajan considers the confession of a Christianity as a crime worthy of death, which forbade the search for Christians and the acceptance of anonymous denunciations. Whoever shows by sacrificing to the gods he is not a Christian and is to be released. Where the adherence to Christianity is proved, the punishment of death is to follow. The action he prescribed rests upon coercive power of the police and the right of repression of the magistracy, which required no settled form of procedure. In pursuance of these orders and measures were taken against Christians and other places also. The most distinguished martyrs under Trajan were Ignatius, the pastor of Antioch, Simeon, pastor of Jerusalem. Now we come to Marcus Aurelius. Roman Empire between the Roman Emperor between 168 and 180 AD. Born in Rome, April 26, 128 AD, died March 17, 180. His father died with Marcus was yet a boy, and he was adopted by his grandfather, Annius Verus. In the first pages of his Meditations, he has left us an account unique in antiquity of his education by near relatives and by tutors of distinction, diligence, gratitude, and hardiness seem to have been one of his chief characteristics. Gratitude and hardiness. From his earliest years, he enjoyed the friendship and patronage of the Emperor Hadrian, who bestowed upon him the honor of equestrian order when he was only 6 years old, and made him a member of the Salian priesthood at 8, and compelled Antoninus Pius immediately after his own adoption to adopt as sons and heirs both the young Marcus Seonius and Commodus, known later as Emperor Lucius Verus. In honor of his adopted father, he changed his name from M. Julius Aurelius Verus to M. Aurelius Antoninus. By the will of Hadrian, he espoused Faustina, the daughter of Antoninus Pius. He was raised to the courtship, or consulship, in AD 140, and in 147 received the Trubician power. His co-reign with Lucius Verus was between 161 through 169. After the death of Lucius Verus in 169, he reigned alone till his death in 180 AD. He is a great philosopher. Niebuhr calls him the noblest character of his time. It is true that the most marked trait of his character was his devotion to philosophy and letters. Philosophy became a disease in his mind and cut him off from the truths of practical life. He was steeped in the grossest superstition. He surrounded himself with charlatans and magicians. The highest offices in the empire were sometimes conferred on his philosophic teachers, whose lectures he attended even after he became emperor. In the midst of the Parthian War, he found time to keep a kind of private diary, his famous Meditations, or 12 short books of detached thoughts and sentences in which he gave over to the posterity the results of his rigorous self-examination. In his dealing with the Christians, Marcus Aurelius went a step further than any of his predecessors. Throughout the reigns of Trajan, Hadrian, and Antoninus Pius, the procedure followed by Roman authorities in their treatment of Christians has that outlined in Trajan's prescript to Pliny, by which it was ordered that the Christians should not be sought out. If brought before the courts, legal proof of their guilt should be forthcoming before they could be executed or punished. It is clear that during the reign of Aurelius, the comparative leniency of the legislation of Trajan gave way to a more severe temper. In southern Gaul, at least, an imperial prescript inaugurated an entirely new and much more violent era of persecution. Eusebius, in Asia Minor and in Syria, the blood of Christians flowed in torrents. In general, the recrudescence of persecution seems to have come immediately through the local action of provincial governors, impelled by the insane outcries of terrified and demoralized city mobs. In any general imperial edict was issued, it has not survived. It seems more probable that the new decrees mentioned by Eusebius were local ordinances of municipal authorities and provincial governors. As to the emperor, he maintained against the Christians the existing legislation, though it has been argued that the imperial edict against those who terrify by superstition the fickle minds of men was directed against Christian society. It is clear, however, that from the scattered references and contemporary writings of Celsus, Origen, Contra Celsum, Melita in Eusebius, Athenagoras, Legatio Pro Christianianus, that throughout the empire an active pursuit of the Christians was now undertaken. In order to encourage their numerous enemies, the ban was raised from delatores, or denouncers, and they were promised rewards, bounty hunters, for the cases of successful conviction. The impulse given by this legislation to an unrelenting pursuit of the followers of Christ rendered their condition so precarious that many changes in ecclesiastical organization and discipline date at least an embryo at this period of time. Another significant fact pointing to the growing numbers of influence of the Christians, the increasing distrust on the part of the imperial authorities and the cultured classes, is that active literary propaganda emanating from the imperial surroundings was commenced at this point of time. The Cynic philosopher, the Cretans, took part in public disputations with Justin in Rome. Fronto, the preceptor and bosom friend of Marcus Aurelius, denounced the followers of the new religion in a formal discourse, and the satirist Lucian of Samosata turned the shafts of his own wit against them as a party of ignorant fanatics. No better proof the tone of the period of the widespread knowledge of Christian beliefs, practices which prevailed among the pagans is needed when the contemporary true word of Celsus and Origen, a work in which were collected all the culmines of pagan malice and all the arguments set forth with the skill of the trained rhetorician, which the philosophy and experience of the pagan world could muster against the new creed of Christians. The earnestness and frequency with which the Christians replied to these assaults by the apologetic works of Athenagoras, Meniceus, Felix, Theophilus of Antioch, addressed directly to the emperors themselves or to the people at large, show how keenly alive they were in the dangers arising from those literary and academic foes. For such and so many causes, it is not surprising that the Christian blood flowed freely in all parts of the empire. The excited populace saw in the misery and the bloodshed of the period a proof that the gods were angered by their toleration accorded to the Christians. Consequently, they threw on the latter all the blame for the incredible public calamities, whether it was famine, pestilence, drought, or floods. The cry was the same. Tertullian, Apologeticum 5. Christianus Leninem, throw the Christians to the lions, was the byword of the day. The pages of the apologists show how frequently the Christians were condemned and what penalties they had to endure. And these vague and general references are described in all the gruesome details. Among them are the Acta of Justin and his companions who suffered at Rome in 165. Carpus, Papias, Agathonica, who were put to death in Asia Minor. The Cilitan martyrs in Numidia. And the touching letters of the churches of Lyons and Vienna, in which is contained the description of the tortures inflicted by Blandina and her companions at Lyons. Inflicted on Blandina and her companions in Lyons. These were all Baptist. Incidentally, this document throws much light on the character and the extent of the persecution of the Christians in southern Gaul and on the share of the empire. Now if you look up here to the map, we find out what's happening. Here we are in 200 AD, right in the beginning of it. Some of the irregular churches had started. By 251 AD, we have the council at Rome, where Novatian and Cornelius was a liberal apologist for those that had committed sins by sacrificing to idols to save their lives. Novatian said, if they publicly put off Christ, then we shall make them to publicly be baptized and put him back on, because every person that was also interrogated that was a Christian was tried to tear out of them, dig out of them, convey out of them the names of other Christians, and those names of the Christians were taken, and those Christians were killed, and they had to die for the faith. So Novatian said, if they're going to do that, then we shall require them to publicly put on Christ again. Cornelius was not for making them to be publicly baptized again, because it would definitely put a death sentence on them. We have Septimius Severus, founder of the African dynasty of the Roman emperors, born in Lepus Magna in Africa, April the 11th, 146. He died in York, England, February the 4th, 211. Severus came from a family that had become Roman citizens, and in his career as an official at Rome, in the provinces he had favored by the Emperor Marcus Aurelius, in the reign of the Commodus, he was appointed legate of the 4th Legion on the Euphrates. And this gave him the opportunity to become acquainted with the affairs in the East. He married Julia Domina, a member of the priestly family of Emesa, who was a mother of Caracalla, Caracalla, and Geta. When the emperor Pertinax was killed by the mutinous soldiers at Rome, Severus, who was then governor of Upper Pannonia, was proclaimed emperor. During the reign of Severus, a fifth persecution of the Christians broke out. He forbade the conversion to Judaism and to Christianity. The persecution raged especially in Syria, Damascus, where the Apostle Paul was baptized and where he was struck down by God himself and saved, and in Africa. In 203, Perpetua and Philistos and their companions suffered martyrdom at Carthage. Leonidas, Origen's father, Potumnia, Basil the soldier were the famous martyrs during this period of time. This is up to from 202 to 211 AD. Caius Julius Verus Maximus Thrix, which means he was from Thracia. He was a Thracian. He reigned in Rome between 235 and 8 AD, 235 and 238. He was a barbarian and evil in his persecution to Christians. Number 7, Decius, the Roman emperor from 249 to 251 AD, and during his period of time, this is when Novatian and Cornelius had their debate in Rome. See, we're coming up to this period of time right here now. 251 A.D., 251. In the Roman church, we have the church government is going to be changed. We have irregular churches. We have baptismal regeneration, infant baptism, non-fellowship declared with other Christians in 251. The true churches are now changing their philosophy and their theology. 7. By the way, Caius Julius Maximus Marcus reigned between 235 and 238 A.D. Now we have Decius. That's where we get the decimal point. That's where we get 10. This is a Roman emperor between 249 and 251. He was born near Sirmium in Pannonia of a Romanized family. practically nothing is known about his career, but the greater part of his life seems to have been passed in the army. He was a soldier. He was the first of the great soldier emperors from the Nanubian provinces, under whom this senatorial regime ended and the governmental became an absolute monarchy. Problems of administration, internal as well as external, at once claimed his attention. Oblivious of the changes wrought by time and the march of ideas, he pinned his faith to the almost abandoned paganism of old Rome as the solution of the problems of his time. Such sweeping reforms necessarily brought into prominence the growing power of the Christian church and made it clear that any attempt to realize or enforce the absolutism of the early Roman politics must necessarily be futile as long as a considerable body of citizens possessing the Christian creed was allowed to be free and exercise their religion. Beliefs in the freedom of conscience and the higher estimate of religion found among the Christians could find no part in such the schemes of those of Decius, and would necessarily prove an insurmountable obstacle to the complete realization of his plans. Various reasons had been assigned for the emperor's hatred of Christianity, some seeing it as an evidence of his innate cruelty, others to desire to be avenged on the friends of his predecessor. But there can be little doubt that the main motives for his hostility were political and conceived not in the form of fanaticism, but in purposes of political expediency. The scope of his anti-Christian legislation was broader than that of any of his predecessors and more far-reaching in its effects. The texts of his edicts have not survived, but the general tenor can be judged from the manner in which they were executed. The object of the emperor was not the extermination of Christians, but the complete extinction of Christianity itself. Pastors were unconditionally punished with death. To all others was given an opportunity to recant and to ensure the abandonment of Christianity. All were compelled to submit to some test of their loyalty to paganism, such as the offering of sacrifice. Now see, this is what we're talking about. This is what happened with Novatian and Cornelius. The pouring of libations, the burning of incense to the idols, the unexpectedness of the attack, coupled with the fact that an appalling amount of laxity and corruption had manifested themselves during the long peace which the church had enjoyed, produced the most deplorable effect in the Christian fold. The church was changing. The church's philosophy and religion were changing. The theology was changing. Multitudes presented themselves to the magistrates to express their compliance with the imperial edict. And these apostates' tickets were issued, attesting to the fact they had offered sacrifice or burned incense, while others, without actually performing the rites, availed themselves to the venality of the magistrates to purchase certificates attesting to their renunciation. In other words, they bought certificates saying that they had offered sacrifice to idols. And these were the laxity of the discipline of the churches in 251 A.D. between Novatian and Cornelius. These defections, though numerous, more than counterbalanced by the multitudes who suffered death, exile, confiscation of all property, torture in all parts of the empire, the Decian persecution was the severest trial to which the churches up to that time had been subjected, and the loss suffered by the churches in consequence of apostasy was almost as damaging as the losses by martyrdom. The churches changed their discipline. They accepted those that offered these sacrifices back in, while many died. Number 8, the Valerian, from 253 to 260 A.D. All pastors and deacons were killed. He was a Roman emperor between 253 and 260, member of the distinguished family, and he had held several offices before the army proclaimed him emperor in 253 at Rhaetia. Weak and irresolute in his abilities, were unequal to his difficulties of the times. His son and co-regent Gallienus was lacking also in force. Christian tradition regards him as the originator of the persecution of Christians under Decius in 257. Valerian issued a prescript of kindly language, taking from Christians to the right to hold assemblies or to enter the subterranean places of burial, sending the clergy into exile. In 258, by a new and absolutely merciless edict, all pastors and deacons were executed immediately. Men of senatorial and equestrial rank were punished with degradation and confiscation of goods to be followed by death. If they refused to offer heathen sacrifice, women were threatened with confiscation of their property in exile. Christians in the imperial household were sent in chains to perform forced labor in the imperial domains. In this persecution of Christians in Rome and Carthage, they lost their leaders and bishops. Sextus of Rome was seized on August the 6th, 258. In one of the catacombs and was put to death, Cyprian of Carthage suffered martyrdom September 14th. Another martyr was a Roman deacon, Lawrence. In Spain, Pastor Fructus of Tarragona and his two deacons were put to death on the 21st of January, 259. There were also executions in the eastern provinces. Taken altogether, however, the repressions were limited to scattered spots and had no great success. Valerian was all finally captured by the Persians and died a prisoner. Marcianus and his two sons were killed in the struggle for the throne. Gallienus, who became Valerian's successor, annulled at once his entire father's laws hostile to Christianity. Aurelian, Roman emperor between 270 and 275, born of humble parents near Sirmium in Pannonia, September the 9th, AD 214, died AD 275. At the age of 20, he entered the military service in which, because of exceptional ability and remarkable body strength, his advancement was rapid. On the death of Claudius, he was proclaimed emperor by the army of Sirmium, and became sole master of the Roman dominions on the suicide of his rival Quintilius. The candidate of the Senate. During early years of his reign, Aurelian exhibited remarkable justice and tolerance towards Christians. They got a breather. In 272, when he had gained possession of Antioch after defeating Zenobia in several battles, he also appealed to the Christians to decide whether the church building in Antioch belonged to the Orthodox bishops Dominus or to the party represented by the favorite Zenobia, Paul of Samosata, who had been deposed for heresy as a synod held 3 or 4 years before. His decision, based probably on the edict of Gallienus, was that the property belonged to those who were in union with the bishops or the pastors of Italy and the city of Rome. Here where Rome becomes to be very important. This act was based upon political motives. It cannot be construed into any one of the friendliness for the Christians. As soon as he was at liberty to carry out his schemes for infernal reform, Aurelian revived the polity of his predecessor Valerian, threatened to suspend the edict of Gallienus, and commenced a systematic persecution of the followers of Christ. The exact date of the inauguration of this policy is not known in history. It is summer of 275 and dispatched to the governor of the provinces, but Aurelian was slain before he could put it into execution. Diocletian, number 10. 284 to 305 A.D. He was a Roman emperor and persecutor of the church, born of parents who had been slaves at Diocletia near Salona in Dalmatia, A.D. 245. Died at Salona, A.D. 313. The Coptic Orthodox Church began its own calendar of martyrs by the first year of his reign in 284. He entered the army and by his marked abilities attained the offices of governor of Mysia and council and commander of the guards of the palace. In Persian war under Carus, he especially distinguished himself when the son and successor of Carus, Numerian, was murdered by Chalcedon, and the choice of the army fell upon Diocletian, who immediately slew his own hand with his own hand the murderer in September 17, 284. His career as emperor belongs to secular history. The reign of Diocletian between 284 and 305 marked an era both in military and political history of the empire. The triumph which he celebrated together with his colleague Maximum, November 20, 303, was the last triumph which Rome ever beheld. Britain, the Rhine, the Danube, the Nile furnished trophies, but the proudest boast of the conqueror was that of Persia. The persistent enemy of Rome had at last been subdued. Soon after his accession to the power of Diocletian realized that the emperor was too unwieldy and too much exposed to attack to be safely ruled by a single head. Accordingly, he associated with himself with Maximin, a bold but rude soldier, at first as Caesar and afterwards as Augustus, 286. Later on, the further disputed his power by granting the inferior title of Caesar to two generals, Galerius and Constantius, 292. He reserved for his own portion Thrace, Egypt, Asia, Italy, Africa, and Maximin's provinces, where Galerius was stationed on the Danube, and Constantius was in charge of Gaul, Spain, and Britain. But the supreme control remained under Diocletian's hands. None of the rulers resided in Rome, and thus the way was prepared for the downfall of the imperial city. Moreover, Diocletian undermined the authority of the Senate, assumed the diadem, introduced several ceremonial of the Persian court. After prosperous reign of nearly 21 years, he had abdicated the throne and retired to Salona, where he lived in magnificent seclusion until his death. Diocletian's name is associated with the last and most terrible of all the 10 persecutions of the early churches. Nevertheless, it is a fact that Christians enjoyed peace and prosperity during the greater portion of his reign. Eusebius, who lived at this time, describes in glowing terms the glory and the liberty with which the doctrine of piety was honored. And these were, you have to realize, this was the, what we have the previews of a state church. The big churches were persecuting the little local independents, and we have the polity of the church beginning to change at this time. The doctrine of piety was honored, and they extolled the clemency of the emperors towards the Christian governors whom they appointed and towards the Christian members of their households. He tells us that the rulers of the church were courted and honored with the greatest serviency by all rulers and governors. He speaks of the vast multitudes that flocked to the religion of Christ and of the spacious and splendid churches erected in the place of the humbler buildings of earlier times. At the same time, he bewails the falling from the ancient fervor by reason of excessive liberty. Had Diocletian remained sole emperor, he would have probably have allowed this toleration to continue undisturbed. It was his support, Galerius, who first induced him to turn persecutor. These two rulers of the East, at the council held at Nicomedia in A.D. 302, resolved to suppress Christianity. Throughout the empire, the Cathedral of Nicomedia was demolished February 24, 303. An edict was issued to tear down the churches to the foundations and destroy the sacred scriptures by fire. This is sacred scriptures of the Bible. And commanding also that those who were in honorable stations, in other words, in politics, were to be degraded, if they preserved in their adherence to Christianity. Three further edicts between 303 and 304 marked successive stages in the severity of the persecution. The first ordering the bishops and presbyters and deacons should be imprisoned. The second that they should be tortured and compelled by every means to sacrifice to idols. Third, including the laity as well as the clergy. The atrocious cruelty with these edicts was enforced, and the vast numbers of those who suffered for the faith are attested to by Eusebius and the Acts of the Martyrs. We read even the massacre of whole populations of a town because they declared themselves to be Christians. The whole town was killed. The abdication of Diocletian, May 1, 305, and the subsequent partition of the empire brought relief on many provinces. In the east, however, where Galerius and Maximian held sway, the persecution continued to rage. Thus, it will be seen that the so-called Diocletian persecution should be attributed to the influence of Galerius, and it continued for 7 years after Diocletian's abduction. I hope that this tells you just a little bit about the history of the churches during this period of time. We are up here in the fourth century at this time. Now the churches are beginning to change. We have Montanists, we have Patarines, the Novatians, where Novatian was stood against Cornelius. We have the Puritans. We're going to have the Donatists and the Patarines. Patarines are sufferers also. We have all of this beginning in this period of time right here. And we'll see how the state church under Constantine begins to change her doctrines according to pagan religions. They adopt much of Judaism in their pomp and circumstance. Now, I hope that you have enjoyed this class period and class number 38B. It was a long reading and maybe boring to some, but this is historical evidence of what happened during the period of time in Revelation 2 and verse 10, and I'll read that scripture one more time. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison. The devil in the name of these emperors and through these emperors. That you may be tested, and that you may have tribulation 10 times, 10 days, 10 periods of time. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for your word today. Thank you for all of those souls of your people that gave their lives for your word and for your doctrines and for your truth. We remember them. Give us the grace that if things like this happen to us, that we'll be staunch and true to your word. Thank you for the freedom that we have to preach your word and it goes out all over the world. Forgive us where we fail you. Help us to be servants of you, willing servants, vessels of